Good morning. Today is Thursday, April the 29th. 7th. Oh, I wrote down 7, too. I'm not sure I'm long for these glasses. I put the reading glasses on, I can see. I put these on, all of a sudden I can't.
That's why I would carry a watch with a date on it.
I got Babe Ruth on mine.
Even better.
Joining us this morning from the California Highway Patrol, John Clevenger. Doing his best, Paul Kraft.
Well,
who likes to say that he's Larry DeBee. No, okay, not really. But, you know, we can get people in trouble here pretty quick, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, all right. We can have some fun. All right, you ready for your question?
Let's go for it.
All right. Why do we say poppycock?
That is a...
What, you think it would be something that would be normal?
I've heard it before.
Yeah.
It
replaced or preceded certain barnyard references.
I think it's like a plant or something, isn't it? Or a flower.
Basically, it's saying you're full of poppycock.
Right. I was way off.
Yeah.
Maybe flowers can grow.
You're not a farm boy, are you? At the age of 24, Charles Brown adopted the pen name of Artemus Ward. His yarns became immensely popular, and soon after they began appearing in the Cleveland Plain Dealer in 1858. His real name was concealed. Ward ignored convention. In lieu of stilted prose, he used language that prime readers condemned as coarse and incomprehensible. Taking a dig at political oratory, he adopted a Dutch barnyard term for soft dung. So we can use fancy words here, too. The hot air spouted by the aspirants for office, said the humorist, were nothing more than pure poppycock. Sensing Ward's new word was earthy, his fans applied it to congressional debates without knowing its meaning. Soon, any kind of worthless talk or nonsense came to be called
poppycock.
There you go. New word.
Oh, it's from the Dutch. That's why I didn't understand it.
Oh, wow. Oh, I see. I see. You don't think there's much of a Dutch population in southern Humboldt and northern Mendocino, huh?
You know, I'm not going to comment. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you just did, bud. Oh, boy. Well, it certainly seems as if the weather has changed. I don't know if somebody, was the phrase that they're using around the Warriors now, flip the switch.
Yeah.
I don't know if, a guy decided to flip the switch and say, okay, winter's done, and let's just, get the birds chirping and make things happen. But when the weather changes, it certainly changes your folks' daily routineness, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Down there, it went from winter to summer instantly. I don't think we saw spring down there.
So the flowering cherries just kind of missed out this year?
I'm not sure about the plants.
Oh, okay.
But the weather.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Are you starting to see the tourist activity?
It started to pick up. We see a lot of travel trailers kind of coming up and down the area. We do see a little bit more traffic. But for the most part, it's not excessive like how it used to be years ago.
You mean when the labor force came to town?
Well, I mean, just in tourism in general.
Oh, I see. PCing it today, huh? Okay. Never know who might be listening to this. I got it.
True. Had to cover all bases.
Travel trailers, I think that there are two types of folks that pull those. There's somebody who's been doing it for decades, and it's just it's an extension of the vehicle, and it's kind of like a dog with its tail. I mean, it's just as natural, things happen.
Absolutely.
And then you got the first timers, or the occasionals, or the wannabes.
Right.
When you see somebody pulling a trailer, do you give them a little bit extra attention just to see?
So, just from what we've kind of dealt with down in our area, I recently just purchased a trailer, and one of the biggest fears I had was wheel bearings, because we've had numerous trucks pulling travel trailers. Well, they'll lose a wheel on the highway, and it just destroys their trailer. They don't have bearings. The wheel goes off into the wilderness, or,
the wheel or the tire?
The wheel.
Really? It just kind of pops off the axle?
Well, once that bearing is gone, okay. It just slides right off the axle or the little hub there, right. And just takes off. So it's not the tire, it's the whole wheel. And, you know, they have to service those, you know, annually or however often they use it. But we've seen a lot of that. And when that happens, usually it's in a bad area, on a hill, on a turn. And, you know, and they don't want to damage it anymore. So they just stop it right there and kind of pull to the side as much as they can. So that was one of my fears of when I did purchase the trailer. So it was one of the first things I did. But, yeah, you get a lot of people who do have been driving trailers for a while, and they get very comfortable with it, and they forget that it's back there as well. So the
unless it's really dragging on you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so they're used to it. And then you get the newbies that just kind of drag it, and then they don't know how to turn correctly or maybe,
That's what I was thinking. Some of the turns are a little bit – you have to consider it a little bit more. You have to take a little bit more time, slow down. Big arches, not hammer the wheel and go hard right or hard left, because all you're going to do is either snap it or crunch your car.
Absolutely. But we also see that in these semi-truck drivers, too, so there may be a lot of...
Really?
Movies.
Even the pros?
Oh, well, you can... I mean, because they got a license.
Pros by definition, not necessarily by experience.
It's their professional job.
Yes, they get paid to do what they're doing. Yeah.
But we'll get them driving through Garberville, and they'll make a turn just on Sproul Creek to get over to the freeway, and they'll just drive right over the sidewalk. So it happens. I mean, you can go out there and see the curb marks from the tires rubbing on there. I've seen it a couple times, and, you know, able to pull them over and give them a ticket for it, because... It's an unsafe turn there.
Is that indicative of other things, or are you just trying to get him to slow down, or pay attention? Or,
I mean, if you see
if somebody's standing there, that's
exactly.
One thing.
Or yeah, if you got people walking on the sidewalk, and you got this trailer with four wheels on one side going on the sidewalk, and it's not a.
So it's a public safety thing. It's It's not a revenue generator.
No, and we don't get revenue from that. All our revenue comes from registration.
Right. But that's the euphemism that's out there, a nickel and dime kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But that certainly wouldn't be in that category.
No, a lot of everything we do is based off of safety. I mean, turn speed, anything like that.
Signs in the car.
Safety.
Okay, it's an inside joke. You'll see it if you see John go by. KINS, News and Information Time, is 8:19. We'll be back with more from John Clip.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with John Clevenger from the Garberville office of the CHP. John, how different is the Arcata operation versus Garberville? I know that typically people will go from Garberville either to Ukiah or to Arcata, and that would be perceived as a step up. Is it?
It is. It depends on the person. Garberville is a training office, so we do get a lot of new recruits in, and then either they will transfer to back to where they're from, or if they like the area, they'll eventually transfer to an area like Arcata, which obviously has a lot more amenities in the area, or Ukiah, same kind of thing. Because Garberville is kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It takes a little time if you live out of area to drive to the office versus the luxury of having, a lot more real estate.
10-minute drive kind of thing.
Exactly. So in the Garberville office, you'll have a lot more junior officers than you would in the Humboldt office. So that's the downside, too. If a junior officer transfers to a senior office, then they're going to be at the bottom of the list. So, shift, sign-ups, vacation. you're going to be last choice.
Pecking order.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, who has to bring the good meat to the barbecue
absolutely.
And get away with the potato chips.
But versus Garberville, you stay there for 5 years, you're going to be halfway up the list and picking your own shifts. So there's pros and cons to both. But
well, I would think a training office, there may be a fatigue with having to feel as if you're revisiting the same topics every 6 months. But it kind of keeps it front of mind for you. And the enthusiasm that the newbies have, you know, instead of trying to crank it up for them, you're trying to dampen it down so that they're not out there, you know, arresting ants for not walking in the crosswalk.
No, absolutely. Training is the best way of learning. You can learn something and then go out there and practice it. But when you teach someone else how to do the job or maybe how to stop someone on the highway, you tend to learn more by teaching. And that's really good for a lot of junior officers. And yeah, it does keep the morale up, the energy level. You know, a lot of people coming in with a lot of enthusiasm, but at the same time, like, okay, slow it down a little bit because, you know, experience will show you that, you know, it's not a very fast-paced job. It's slow it all down, think through it clearly, and make good decisions.
Well, it's kind of not that basketball's on my mind, but it is. But they talk about when somebody gets in the zone, everything slows down. They're not going point A to point B, you know, in a sprint. They're seeing things, observing things, but it's registering.
Right.
And then they're acting on it rather than just focusing on the end result, may or may not. You know, particularly, I would think, in an area that's as rural as what Garberville is, there's a lot of things going on. You know, some of the anticipated stuff and some aren't because you're not the destination. You're between points.
Right.
Well, okay, all the goofy stuff that's at the end of the run and all the goofy stuff that's at the beginning are all coming right by you instead of that community being more homogenous, I guess.
No, absolutely. And those people coming through don't have many choices to avoid us in our area. It's just 101 coming straight through.
The detour?
Exactly.
Doesn't exist?
No,
yeah.
No. So we do see a lot of outside area activity. And, you know, at the same time for the officers, I mean, they're out there and they'll make stops in areas where we have no extra help or extra resources. So they have to learn to kind of manage their scene and kind of the surrounding area as well. And so when you talk about getting in that zone and slowing down, it's not just the incident you're on, it's your whole environment. I mean, you got cars coming by. I mean, you got residents that live in areas that you're not even sure because there's so much wooded areas and there'll be a driveway maybe 10 feet down the road you can't see. So now you have a house to your side. It's just being aware of all your surroundings and, you know, trying to take care of the whole incident as a whole. And for the new guys, it's a lot.
I think it could be overwhelming if they're focusing on all the external instead of the event. Okay, they may be safe, but and if they go the other way. Yeah, it just
absolutely.
How long does it take someone coming pretty much out of the academy, getting plopped into Never Never Land, to really kind of get a sense of this is the best approach and to develop those fundamental work habits so that they can then either go on to a regional office or maybe go into a metropolitan setting but be further along?
Well, after the academy, which is, I think, 26 or 27 weeks, it might be 24 by now. I think they've kind of shortened it a little. Then they'll go to their office. They'll do a break-in phase, which is about 3 months. There's four phases to it. And then after they get off the break-in phase, they're on their own, but they're still on probation for a year. After that year, then they can transfer to any office that you know, there's an opening.
It'll take them. I heard that.
But for the metropolitan areas, it's, you know, they'll take a lot of new cadets down there, and they experience a lot more, you know, activity and different stuff than we do up here. So it could be a crutch for someone coming from the metropolitan area to a rural area and vice versa.
Yeah, I would think the frequency hit is a lot larger elsewhere, but the variety.
Yeah,
doesn't
absolutely.
Tend to be quite as much as it is here.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from John Clevenger.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with John Clevenger, PIO out of the Garberville office. And I guess you've got your little specter right on your shoulder, huh? That guy that left us.
Who are we talking about?
Yeah. I don't know. I've already forgotten him, too.
Yeah. Right. Once you promote, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not here. You don't exist.
Yeah.
Let's see if he texts you now. So, John, how does the state or the, I guess it would be the CHP, how do they know that an office is productive? You know, as a training facility, I would suspect that if you're doing your good job, you're going to have a couple of the officers go, you know, this just really ain't for me. You know, I thought it was, but it's not. Okay, and you got others that excel and really shine. I would think that you would want to have a spread and then everybody else in between somehow. How do they know that the training that is being done in the training offices is up to the standards that they expect?
Well, it all comes down to individuals and what their expertise is in. Like for our area, we have a lot of different opportunities they can get involved in, whether it be, you know, working on the highway, the back roads, you know, anything of their choosing. The state offers a lot more kind of interdepartment areas of the CHP, like working a commercial division, working on the drug task force, SWAT team. Maybe even moving to a division or headquarters and working inside and doing electronics or computers. We have a, you know, criminal investigative unit.
That's what I was wondering, you know, how in the training offices, obviously you want the officers to have as a wide a variety of experiences as they possibly can.
Right.
Or at least to see them and maybe kind of be on the, just right on the edges of this stuff. But most of the small offices don't have a lot of that stuff. You know, right. You mentioned the tech investigators. Well, okay, I bet you guys don't have a room full of computer geeks in Garberville's office that are just focusing on the patrol area and being able to take care of that. So how do they get that variety of experience, or is it change office to office as they kind of move through their career?
Well, for each person, everyone comes in with a different level of education and expertise. So maybe someone who had computer knowledge before who joined the Highway Patrol, they would take that expertise and later on eventually fall into that the criminal investigative unit or the, you know, cyber crimes. And we have a division over in headquarters that takes care of everything for that. But the area office itself doesn't have a specific room or anything like that where you would say. But each officer is evaluated individually, and they're accountable for all their time and their activity as well. So they either excel or they find a niche that they enjoy, whether it be commercial or speed or, you know, anything of the sort. But we're all trained the same. We all get the experience the same. It's just in each area, it's a different kind of environment. But ultimately, you can go anywhere in the state, and if you meet a CHP officer, they're going to essentially, they'll look the same, they'll act the same, and they all have the same kind of training.
You know, that look the same thing is kind of frightening when you consider some of the people that have left this area, that they're out there representing our area looking as they do. Just a thought.
Oh, we all wear the same uniform. And
oh, okay. The gift wrap is the same. Well, if somebody is like in one of these rural areas, us all, I mean, we can use Alturas as a, you know, or is the same kind of a thing. And they do have some of this expertise. Let's say they are computer geeks. Would they end up in Garberville, or would they end up in Alturas, or would they maybe have that skill set recognized and be directed in to other areas, obviously with their acceptance of that assignment, but an opportunity to get into their areas of interest so that, one, you're utilizing that experience a lot quicker, and two, they can really hone that skill set to become even more valuable to the department.
Yeah, it is a skill set that when they come in, it gets put to the side because they have to go through the same training. And then after they get off that probational period, we actually have a internal listings of openings for positions at different areas of the department, whether it be division, headquarters, or a certain kind of area, that put out a position available for someone with, you know, cyber skills or anything like that. And what that individual do, it's not where we push them to do it. They have to apply for it themselves within the department. And what they'll do is they'll build like a little resume of what their expertise and skills are. They'll submit it with the proper forms. And then the person that's in charge of that department will take all the applications from throughout the state, and they'll make a determination or interview a certain number of them to see who's going to be best fit for this. Because either, whether it be from Alturas down to the border, there's a lot of individuals with a lot of skills. And, you know, that new person that into Alturas may have more skill set than, you know, somebody who's been on for 10 years who's just been doing the job.
Might be hanging out in Weaverville or somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's intriguing to me that the department wouldn't, when you're doing, I guess it would be the equivalent of an intake interview, looking at this and testing for these skill sets, wouldn't say, you know, we really need you here. Yeah, you know, we got a lot of guys that can play with a speed gun. We don't need you to be wasting your time and your effort and your skill set sitting there on the side of the road, you know, waiting for somebody faster to come zipping by. We got issues right now that the state would benefit more from having you in this position rather than over here.
Right.
It's just an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I can see that aspect to it. But at the same time, it's, say, if that individual's been on for 10 years and another guy's been on for 1 year, and they both have a similar background.
Well, then you go with the guy that you know.
Well, it's
the tenure.
Well, I mean, it's, yeah. You know, they still have to go through the same, but that guy with 1 year could have more appeal or be a better interview than the person down for 10 years. So, but as for an area office, I mean, if a commander or someone sees a potential skill set in someone, they may kind of push them or nudge them, say, hey, maybe you want to apply for this position.
I think it's called a hip check. That would be hockey term, right? Yeah. Yeah. All you need to do is sign this form that's been filled out for you.
Nah, I don't think it goes that far. Yeah.
All right, so you start seeing the forms that end up on your desk with your name on them.
They just encourage you. Like, you know, if you enjoy that, maybe you ought to, you know, expand into it. And we have other areas of the department that offer those skills.
Yeah, wink, wink, nod, nod.
No.
Yeah, fine. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from John.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with John Clevenger from the CHP. John, what is the biggest aha moment that a newbie has coming into your office? Okay, they're there, they look around, and they see there's not too many skyscrapers in Garberville. Okay, Shelter Cove is an interesting place. You're probably not going to be going a lot of time out there. What do they kind of come back and, you know, the deer in the headlight look in that first 2 to 3 weeks?
I think it's the amount of activity that we have in our area. I think they come from a big metropolitan area, or even when they're in Sacramento training, and then they come to this area where they don't see skyscrapers or multiple lane highways or even, you know, center divides or anything of that sort. And they think, well, okay, well, this might be easy and there won't be much to it.
Bucolic.
Yeah. But then you find out, you start going out to Shelter Cove, Alder Point, or anything like that. And no matter where you go, you can, you know, there's something going on and you can get into some activity and, you know, make a difference. Or you can stay on the highway and, you know, we do get some traffic coming through. And, you know, there's a lot of commercial traffic, a lot of tourism coming through sometimes. So there's a variety of it. I mean, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to do.
You had an interesting phrase there when you were describing it, make a difference. And I know, you know, everybody feels that they do, I'm sure, whether they're in the middle of L.A. or whether they're in our type of area. But I think the magnitude or the impact might be greater felt in our area than it is elsewhere because there aren't as many law enforcement folks. The ratios are what the ratios are, but when you come to the aid of somebody, yeah, I would think that the expectation is a little bit different here than what it is in some other markets.
No, absolutely. I think if you live in one of those kind of outplaced areas, you rarely see a patrol vehicle. And when you do, you appreciate them being out there. If you don't want them out there.
Do you
there,
get the full hand waves?
You know, sometimes.
An appreciation.
Right.
You know, because they're not going to stop you and say, hey, nice to see you. And then,
well, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of times we'll just kind of stop and talk to people out in those areas. And that's when you kind of learn, you know, you start to get to know the people
what's
in those
going
areas.
On too, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm glad you guys are out here. We really appreciate it. You know, wish you could be out here more, but we understand that you can't. And so we get a lot of that. And, you know, when you do go out in those areas and you do want to kind of make a difference, I mean, even down in Laytonville, we'll go out to Covelo every now and then just to kind of, you know, just a little
make sure the road's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably something a lot of folks don't understand is how far south you go.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not, particularly for those of us around the Bay, you know, Garberville, okay, great. So you go to Benbow, maybe Richardson's Grove, maybe the Peg House, you know, for a sandwich or something. And, you know, I kind of hang around and go from Fortuna to there, and that's a little bit further than that.
Oh, it's a lot further than that.
What is the biggest surprise for the community when a new officer comes in?
Well, we are training people, so we have to get as many stops as we can with that person, and it has to be for a violation. So the community will see a uptick in people getting pulled over in town, whether it be for a no front plate or tinted windows, you know, small little equipment violations, which is still a violation. And in some cases, we've had
chicken poppycock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some cases, we've had the same car get pulled over multiple times for different equipment violations. And, you know, they want us to stick to the high, not the office, but the, you know, community members.
Like, the bad guys.
Yeah. Stick to the highway and get the, you know, get the bad people. But, I mean, they need all those, because we're in a rural area, they need all those contacts, as many as possible. And it's good for a trainee just to experience it. And if we do get an individual that's, you know, a little agitated about it, I mean, it's to see how that trainee does under those kind of circumstances.
I would think that a lot of the folks that are the newbies, do they have the ability to catch and release? Or are they really just training and it's go through the process, write it up? You don't have the experience yet to tell somebody to, you know, pay attention and send them on their way.
It's all based on the training officer. There's a lot of times where they'll stop someone and, like, you know, they'll test them, like, oh, do you know where you are right now? And if they don't know, like, all right, well, how are you gonna write a ticket if you don't know where you are, or you know, to let someone know? So, you know, you've not gonna write that person a ticket because you don't have all the information available. And it's just being able to kind of multitask.
So, yeah, getting to know what's going on.
Exactly.
And all that kind of stuff. Well, nice to see you. We'll probably see you, probably around 4th of July because nobody wants to work that week.
Bring it on.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, John. See everybody tomorrow.
Thank you.